Wow, I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad we're doing this. I am going to turn off this view so I don't have to look at myself. And I think online you can still see me. That's my understanding. Great. Great, great, great. Today we are going to practice. Let me just check and see online or even in the room. Who is this the first time you've ever done a full day or a full weekend of mindfulness? Is there anyone here that's okay? Yeah, great. It can feel a little daunting if it's the first time, but actually, doing this together is going to be what makes this day, what makes this whole experience so beautiful. And I dare say I'm willing to stretch and say that every single one of you will want to do this again soon. So after today, you'll be hooked if you haven't done it before. That's why there's so many of us. It's because when you do these days, you see how important it is for them to happen. And here at Seattle Insight, we do lots of day-longs and these weekends. So you're always welcome to come on a weekend and sit, no matter how your life is unfolding. So I want to talk a little bit about how we're going to do this weekend. We are going to practice with the Satipatthana. The Satipatthana is the establishment of mindfulness. It's what the Buddha taught as how you can establish mindfulness. And even though we hear that word, mindfulness, we think of it as being mindful, like paying attention. But the establishment of mindfulness is something entirely different. What the establishment of mindfulness does is allow us to be with experience without having the push or the pull to control it, to fix it, to make it the way I want it to be. And sometimes experiences come to us that we don't necessarily want. But how to be with that? You don't want it, but it has come to you. And so the establishment of mindfulness is learning how to, another way you could say it is, we're learning how to be with the life that has come to us without all the kerfuffle of wishing it were not so. And so this establishment is not, it's the establishment that we have to learn to do. It's not that easy to establish mindfulness in our ordinary minds. In our ordinary minds, if I don't like something, I don't want it. And so we spend a great deal of energy trying to get rid of it because we don't want it. Everybody does that. It's not rocket science. I don't want it. So it should go away. But many things do not go away. There's a sutta where there's a famous teacher who has a lot of students. When the Buddha was teaching, he had, thousands of students, and he routinely would, talk a lot of mess about the Buddha, routinely say all these little, just dismissive kind of make fun of him and stuff. And at one point he heard about the Buddha's idea that this is not about you. That's the problem. It's not about self. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about us. So even though we're taking everything personal and trying to fix it, it really isn't about us. And we actually have very little control over what comes at us. So he hears about this concept of non-self, or it's not about you, lack of control. And he is talking to a group of his friends, and he's saying, his students, he's saying, oh yeah, if that Buddha was here, man, if Gautama was here, I'd be running him up one side, down the other, just talking mad stuff. And somebody in the audience says, oh, the Buddha's just right over there in that grove. We should go talk to him. Because he was like, I wish I had brought the sutta, but he was like, he would talk to him like he was a elephant, and he was just twirling him around and smacking him over here and smacking him over there. It's like, just beat him down. So they tell him, well, the Buddha, he's just right over there. It's like, ah, oh, he's probably laying around busy, can't really talk to me. Like, no, I think he's not doing nothing. Nobody's there. No public meeting, no nothing. Let's go talk to him. So eventually this teacher goes, because he's being prodded by his students to go do it. Go beat Gautama. So he goes and he goes to the Buddha. And he's all loud and disrespectful when he shows up. And he says, so you say that there's non-self, right? And the Buddha says, yes, that's what I said. He goes, well, that doesn't make any sense, you know. Of course I'm the controller of my body and my existence. I'm the one that decides what kind of life I have. This is the way we all think. We think we control the kind of life we have. That's why we have all that shame and guilt. Because you lose your job and all of a sudden, I did something wrong. It's my fault I lost my job. All of a sudden, my body is aching. It's my fault. I didn't do my body right. I should have did this. I should have did that. You know, my mental health is stressed out. I can't, you know, I'm just, it's not fitting right with me. It's my fault. So there's all this control. I'm the reason why I'm a success. I'm the reason why I'm a failure. And this is what this teacher tells the Buddha. And the Buddha says, oh, so you think it's like if you were a king and your body and your life, you are like the way a king would control his subjects and tell his subjects when they can go and where they can go and what they can do and what they can't do. And he goes, that's right. That's what it is. Because this teacher was of the belief that if you're born in destitute, then that's your fault. You did something wrong. And if you're born in wealth, then that's your good fortune. You did something right. So there was no need. If you wanted to get out of poverty, you were going to have to get it together and get yourself out. But you can't just look at us to get you out. It's your own doing. And this is the world that Buddha lived in, and this is the world we live in. It's our own doing. We got to fix everything that happened. And Buddha has a completely different framing. And this is the framing he wanted to help this teacher to understand. So what we're going to practice with today is a different framing. So here's what he says to the teacher. He says, okay, well, if you can control your body, I'm sure there are bodily feelings that you don't like. Pain, for instance. So surely you could tell the body, no more of that pain. That's it. Not going to have any more pain around here because I don't like it. So is that true? So Buddha's loud now, right? Loud. All his people in the back can hear. Did you guys get that? Is that true? You can control that, right? The teacher is a little, his name is Agasati. He goes, speak up, Agasati, I can't hear you. You were loud at first. Where are you? What? Speak up so everybody can hear. And he's like, he says, okay, well, if you don't want to answer that, surely there are emotions that you don't want to have, right? Surely. There are certain emotions. Who wants to be sad? Who wants to volunteer and say, I'll be disappointed? all the time. I'll be sad. I'll be weary. I don't mind having grief and dread. Who wants to volunteer for that? So he says, surely you can control the emotions that come your way. And if you don't want them, you could say, enough of that. No more dread in the world. No more dread in me. You guys can have it, but I've had enough of that dread. And again, Agasati can't say anything. So he says, speak up. I don't hear you. Speak up. And he can't say anything. So finally, the Buddha goes through basically an understanding of the four foundations to help him understand. He has to have a different framing on how he's going to do this. He's going to need to look at this from a different understanding if he's going to be able to steady himself. And it cannot come from this judgment that everything that goes wrong in your life is your fault, and everything that goes right in your life is your good graces, or because you're so great. It just doesn't work like that. You'll be up and down all the time, miserable and joyous. And so the Buddha points out that there is a stronger way. And then after the Buddha goes through this long kind of, the sutta is long about how the Buddha explains it, helps this teacher understand. And the teacher is just amazed. And then that's it. He just completely sold by the Buddha. And he's telling his students they should all follow the Buddha. Because what the Buddha's pointing to, you need a framing that this isn't about you. We are all stressed out because we are trying our best to control something that we can't control. And instead, he establishes a sense of mindfulness, that if we learn to establish mindfulness, then our ability to be with experience, good, bad, whatever, is less stressful. Yes, we can be with it. We don't like it, but we can be with it. And learning to be with it is what I would say mindfulness is. It's not learning to pay attention. It's learning to be with it. And he creates these four frames. And over the weekend, we're going to do each frame. We're going to do the first frame this morning, and we're going to do the second frame this afternoon. First frame this morning, second frame this afternoon, third frame tomorrow morning, and the fourth frame tomorrow afternoon. Now, I think, I don't know how many of you know or have heard of the four foundations of mindfulness. Let's see here. Or maybe I should say, how many of you don't know what the four foundations of mindfulness are? Okay. So the four foundations of mindfulness, for most people, they think, oh, that's the beginner stuff. Because, of course, that's what you learn in beginning classes, is you learn the four foundations of mindfulness. So that's the beginner stuff. But in truth, every retreat you go on, every time you sit down to meditate, you are meditating within these four frames. So the more you get comfortable knowing them, connecting to them, the more you can find how in any given moment I could establish mindfulness. And so he gives four ways in which you could establish mindfulness. First one being the body. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Second one is what he calls feeling tones, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or neither. It's a kind of the tone of all of our experiences. It's a little more subtle than the body, and it's a kind of a felt sense in the body, and it's also a mental. So it's this bridge between the body and mind. And then the third foundation is emotions and thoughts, and that's even more subtle. And then the fourth foundation is the Dhammas, how we actually relate to everything that's going on. So how am I relating to this moment is one way you can establish mindfulness. What am I thinking about? What's the emotional energy showing up right now? That's another way you could establish mindfulness, the feeling tone you're having, or the experience itself. And so I want to start with the first foundation. Our sit this morning might be, will be very short. it'll be shorter than the other ones, the first one. But I want to pull this out and read to you what he says about the first foundation, or what he says these foundations are. And it's why, I think I'm saying his name wrong, Agassati. That's what we're going to call him this morning. That's why Agassati, that's why he, that's why he was so connected. That's why he was so overwhelmed with what the Buddha was saying, because the Buddha was actually as great a teacher as him. He is like us, stressed out at times. He also is having all these difficulties. He also has all this upsetness because he can't make something happen, or he doesn't, things aren't working. So the Buddha says that the Satipatthana, that's what it's called. In fact, we use it in English, but just so you know, the Satipatthana Sutta is chanted in Asian cultures every single day. The entire Satipatthana is chanted daily. The way that these suttas were passed down would be actually discourses or Dhamma talks that the Buddha gave, and then a chant would be made of that Dhamma talk, and then people would start chanting it. And that's how monks and nuns, they'd come into the Sangha and they would learn the various chants of the different discourses that the Buddha gave. The Satipatthana was one of them. The Buddha called this the direct path for the purification of beings. Purification of beings, not making us better, but settling us down. The purification of beings for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentations, for the overcoming all this suffering that we have, for the disappearance of pain and grief, and for the attainment of the true way, and for the realization of Nibbana. This is the direct way. He says, namely, it's the four foundations of mindfulness. And so these four foundations are everything we do in Dhamma somehow interweave and help us begin to understand back to these four framings of the Dhamma. So let's talk a little bit about the first foundation. It's called mindfulness of the body. And if you're like me, I thought mindfulness of the body meant mindfulness of this. This is what I thought of as the body. So I got to be mindful of this. And as soon as we start talking about mindfulness of the body, if you take it in its literal understanding, then anybody here who has arthritis is not going to be too happy about the first foundation. Because your immediate thought is, not this body. Can I have your body? You look at bodies that look all young and beautiful. Can I have that body? Because this body can't possibly be what he's talking about. And this is I think, one of the difficulties secular mindfulness has, is because in terms of relaxation, yes, we want this body to settle down, be less painful. But in terms of awakening, what the Buddha was pointing to for the purification of beings and the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation and the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way and for the realization of Nibbana, this Nibbana word being cooling, that's what Nibbana is, to cool the fire. So this cooling of the fire of life, for that to happen, we can't be talking about this body. And we're not. He's not talking about your physical body. Think of it as the first foundation is being mindful of embodiment, of being mindful of the present moment, of knowing where the present moment is versus lost in thought. So it is mindful of the present moment. How do I establish a sense of being here in this moment, arriving in this moment, versus how am I lost off in some opinion or judgment about it? So just being here. And he gives various ways in which we can establish this first foundation. And all of them point to a sense of embodiment. So one way is mindfulness of breathing. And the reason why it's mindfulness of breathing is because your body is going to breathe regardless of what you're doing. It isn't really about you. You can't make the body stop breathing. You can't make it start. If it's starting to wane down and you're like, wait a minute, just get it going, you can forget that. When it's going and the breath is leaving you, it's leaving you. That's it. So there's a kind of way that you could begin to experience the present moment if you just begin to connect to the body breathing. Because the body is breathing in the present moment. Can you see that? It's not about breathing so you can calm down. It's about breathing so you know where you are. And you have this connection with the sense of the body breathing. Second way he establishes mindfulness in the body is by using the elements. You know, the earth, the wind, the fire, the water, space. He uses an experience of feeling the elemental nature of something. So if you think about it, I don't know if you can see out windows, but we look out here, we see the trees there. There's a steadiness to those trees, a weightiness to the trees. And you could begin to see that weightiness as a elemental nature of embodiment of the present moment, a steadiness in the body. You can see how water moves and changes and glues things together. Or you can feel the temperature of the body. So there's a way in which we're going to practice a little bit with noticing the elemental nature of the moment. And the more you do that, the more you feel present, embodied, here. You could be with arthritic pain and feel its hardness, or feel its stingy aliveness, or the heat of it, or the pressure of it. Wind is like pressure. So you could feel some of the most painful experiences from an elemental nature, and you're not caught up in this word called pain that I need to get rid of. Instead, you can be with the experience of it, even great difficult experiences. On an elemental level, we could be with anything. And so this understanding, you can actually embody the present moment of it. He said, as to the physical body, he uses the whole anatomic body structure. So he breaks it down into 32 body parts. So Buddha, without a microscope, could get all the way down to the phlegm. He got all deep in it. I mean, I just think about science, Western science now. And 2,700 years ago, he was teaching his monastics to get all intricate into the sense of the body itself. And he's breaking down this idea that somehow this is my body, that somehow I control this body. And you can begin to divide the body up so minutely that you lose any sense of this being yours. And again, this is to help you establish a sense of the present moment. So he says, breath you could use, elements you could use, the autonomic structure, 32 body parts, or the body as a corpse, its decaying, corpsey nature, the fact that it's dying. Even though we don't think of ourselves as dying, we think of ourselves as living, but actually we're dying. And all of us are on some trajectory, and at some point everything's going to end. And that in and of itself establishes how little control we have over this. Because no one, unless you're like dying from cancer and you've really had enough of the whole thing, but pretty much no one wants to die. We don't want to end. And so if we had our control, we would try to make this body live forever. And yet, the body itself is going to deteriorate. And so he is helping us establish mindfulness by seeing the deterioration of the body itself, this recognition that it will dissolve. And it's not in the morbid sense of, oh, I'm going to die. It's not that. It's this freeing nature that you can begin to see in this very moment. You are not dead. So in this very moment, you can begin to see yourself more and more and more alive as you contemplate more and more and more how this body is dying, because you're less and less and less trying to control it. So that's what these four frames kind of help us, just in the body, come into the present moment. Think of the first foundation as establishing mindfulness in the present moment, right here, right now. You can use your sense doors. You could use the elements, the body breathing. You could use the awareness that this body is alive and dying at the same time. There's all this capacity that we have to come into the present moment just by using the body itself. And that's what we're doing for the first foundation. So that's what we're going to do this morning. So we're going to sit. Yeah, we have a little time to sit here. We're going to sit and come back and walk a little bit, and then sit and walk a little bit and see if we can't fine-tune ourselves to just come here in this moment. Just come here and not be lost in thought. So we'll find ourselves comfortable here. We'll sit a little bit before we do a little walking.